Okay. Zurich American versus Watts.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is David McCush, and I'm the attorney for Appellant and Cross-Appellee Watts Industries. Your Honor, there are three major points in contention in this appeal. The first issue is whether arbitration order was improperly based upon a settlement communication. The September 6th letter here was the only basis for the alleged dispute under the deductible agreement. The district court said that. However, the circumstances attending the September 6th letter were described by declarations which were never contradicted. That uncontradicted record establishes that that letter was made in furtherance of court-ordered settlement discussions, was explicitly written to facilitate settlement, and set forth a settlement position. The letter was, or should have been, covered by Rule 408, but Zurich nevertheless used it to manufacture a dispute under the arbitration provisions. Importantly, the existence of a dispute was the key question before the district court on the petition to compel. Contrary to the policies of Rule 408, the use of the letter to establish the existence of an arbitrable dispute penalized Watts for pursuing court order settlement as directed by the California court here. The Lorenz case affirms that this use is impermissible, even if the letter were not used to establish the question of ultimate liability. The second issue is that there was no dispute ripe for arbitration at the time the petition was filed. That is because there had been no policy benefits paid. Without the payment of policy benefits, there could be no demand for reimbursement of deductibles under the deductible agreement and no dispute about the refusal to make reimbursement. At the time, Zurich's motive in filing the arbitration petition was to try to sweep in the policy coverage issues then pending in California into an arbitration proceeding. That has gone by the wayside now. But to create an arbitrable dispute, Zurich attempted to advance the theory that the September 6th letter constituted a repudiation of the deductible agreements. And the district court here said explicitly that this was the sole basis for this finding of an arbitrable dispute, was that there was a repudiation. Otherwise, there would be no arbitrable controversy. Well, Zurich now abandons the very predicate for its arbitration petition, calls it irrelevant, and proceeds on to other points. Among other things, Zurich points to matters outside the record to create an arbitrable dispute. If the court is inclined to consider events that occurred subsequent to the filing of the petition, much of which is not in the record, it is absolutely critical that the specific deductible agreements affected be pinned down. It is important to know, for example, what are the policies under which payments have been made, which in turn allows a determination of which specific deductible agreements are implicated. Zurich issued six policies here, and there was concededly supposed to be one deductible agreement for each policy. In fact, there are fully 11 deductible agreements, only three of which have been signed. And it's particularly important to know which deductible agreements apply here because the agreements vary and are in conflict in both their substantive terms and in the arbitration provisions. Finally, there is a question about the proper scope of arbitration, even if there is a present arbitrable dispute, which is not based upon a settlement communication. The district court's order referred three issues to arbitration. The parties here agree that the first issue, as to whether Zurich repudiated the deductible agreements, is the proper subject of an arbitration. The parties also agree that the second issue, having to do with whether the 1992 deductible agreement created a duty to defend, was incorrectly identified as an arbitrable issue. As to the third issue, the parties both seek a modification of that issue. That issue states that with respect to the Rothschild action, what the parties' rights and obligations are with respect to reimbursement of defense costs. Zurich argues that Rothschild is not an issue, only Armenta. To the extent that the order is modified to refer to Armenta, the parties, we submit that the issue should be the parties' respective rights and obligations under the 94-95, 95-96 deductible agreements with respect to defense costs in Armenta. Zurich, on the other hand, argues that arbitration should be required under all six deductible agreements because it believes it has an advantage in the terms of those agreements. Significantly here, Zurich paid defense costs in Armenta under only two policies, the 94-5, 95-96 policies, and concededly there are only two deductible agreements which correspond with those policies. In other words, any arbitration concerning Watts' deductible obligations must be held under the 94-95, 95-96 deductible agreements because they are the only agreements applicable to the 94 through 96 policies under which defense costs were paid. This issue is actually addressed in California. First, Zurich was ordered to pay defense costs only under those two policies. Later, a year later, Zurich asserted in California that the payments were made under all the policies, and the court rejected specifically the argument that the defense costs should be allocated over all policies. In the paragraph 8 of the order, found at appendix 369, the court concluded, at most, Zurich can only allocate those costs under two policy periods, 94-95 and 95-96, upon which summary adjudication was granted in November 2001. Zurich appealed from that order, and the California Court of Appeal affirmed that order in full. It is now final, and it should be accorded full res judicata effect. It would seem basic law that Zurich cannot now relitigate in this court whether the California court properly determined that defense costs would be allocated only to the 94 through 96 policies. And again, the only dispute under the deductible agreements could be under the 94 through 96 deductible agreements, which would apply to payments made under the 94-96 policies. In sum, Watts is entitled to a judicial determination regarding which specific deductible agreements apply with respect to disputes over specific payments of policy benefits. It's the court's obligation to make that determination. If the Armenta defense costs are going to be referred to arbitration. In this case, the district court did not make that determination because it saw the sole issue before it as being whether there was a dispute framed by the September letter, the September exchange of correspondence. The issue of specific payments was not before it. We have no objection that should this court wish to refer a dispute to arbitration or remand it to the district court to frame the issue for arbitration. But it's the court's obligation to identify which deductible agreements the dispute arises under.
Isn't that a decision on the merits of an issue that is subject to arbitration in the first instance?
No, I would submit it is not, Your Honor. The court's function is to determine whether the jurisdiction of the arbitrator, what are the issues that can be referred to arbitration and under which deductible agreements. So that's a judicial function. What I think Zurich would like to do is just throw it over to the arbitrators to allow them to decide themselves which arbitration agreements or deductible and agreements and arbitration provisions this dispute arises under. That is a judicial function. And that's what we ask for from either this court or the district court before we are referred to arbitration.
Thank you.
Any questions at this point? I'll reserve the balance of my time.
All right, thank you. Mr. Castellan?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. Ruben Castellan on behalf of defendant and appellee James Jones Company. There are a few significant differences between Watts and James Jones, and what I'd like to do is briefly highlight those differences. Number one is that September 6, 2001 letter was never signed nor approved, nor is there any evidence to that fact by James Jones Company. The only indication of James Jones Company on that letter is that it was carbon copy to its attorneys in that lawsuit. In addition to that, it's very important to recognize that the agreements, the deductible agreements that are at issue here, were never signed by James Jones Company, nor is there any evidence that they were ever reviewed or that James Jones played any role in their negotiation. Perhaps even more significantly, there's no benefit conferred by those deductible agreements upon James Jones. And what I mean by that is the insurance policy terms and the coverages afforded on those policy terms were not affected by the deductible agreement. The only benefit that was conferred may have been a reduction of premiums, of which there's no evidence that James Jones paid any of those premiums. Therefore, the benefit would have been conferred upon Watts. Also, I'd like to point out to the court that there's only one deductible agreement of which there's any evidence was actually executed while James Jones was a subsidiary of Watts. The evidence is that there's two deductible agreements that were executed after James Jones had been sold to another company altogether. With respect to the other ones that we've earlier heard about, the deductible agreements, they're undated, so it's very unclear from the record whether, in fact, those took place after James Jones was already sold or whether it took place while James Jones was a subsidiary. In light of all this information, it's basic contract law that James Jones should not be subject to an agreement for which it never played a role in, was not benefited in any way, nor did it execute in any way. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Stanley. Mr. Cathcart.
Thank you. May it please the court. You're being asked to do two things on this appeal that you should resist. The first is to take the concept of whether there's a dispute framed in two letters, not just the September 6, but also the September 21 response, which frames a dispute and identifies a dispute. You're being asked to eviscerate the meaning of dispute. And the second thing you're being asked to do is, under the guise of an appeal, as Judge Sykes asked about, you're being asked to go to the merits of whether or not six deductibles apply or just two or what the condition precedent was, whatever. Judge Bucklow's role was to identify the arbitrable issues. I agree with what Mr. McCush said on that. And in her September 25 order, she says, referring back to her September 9, 2002 order of a year earlier and reinstating it, she says, I emphasize again that my opinion is limited to holding that the dispute raised by the September 6, 2001 and September 21, 2001 letters is arbitrable under the deductible agreement. Except as to James Jones, and I'll get to that in a moment. Those two letters do set out the nature of the dispute. That's been referred to arbitration, and that's what we should be permitted to arbitrate. Now, the arbitrators may frame those issues. We may brief those issues. They may be decided adverse to us. That's not the issue here. The issue is there a dispute? And we maintain there is.
What relation do the decisions by the California courts have to this case?
Judge Lichtman's order, first of, there's an order of June 17, 2002, at the appendix, page 196. He points out that all claims in the coverage action are separate and independent, independent and severable from those relating to the arbitration. On August 30 of 2002, this is in the appendix at page 369, the same location at the appendix cited by Mr. McCush, he's pointed out that there are the payments for defense costs at that time must be made under two policies so that Zurich cannot limit its responsibility to reimburse Watts for defense costs by allocating over six policy periods, talking about the policies. That doesn't talk about the deductible agreements, and it doesn't limit Zurich to two policies if it pays more defense costs and more indemnity costs out by not limiting them. That's a limitation on Zurich. Zurich can't get out of its obligation by limiting to two policies. There was a second aspect of this relationship between those orders and these deductible agreements. This is an insurance program purchased by a conglomerate that had subsidiaries that involved policy coverages in the primary layer. There also are not before you here and not in the California action yet, excess policies. There also are deductible agreements as part of this program. They're independent, they're severable, but they're interrelated. You can't take the benefits of one of those without accepting the obligations of the other part of that program. Now, that goes to Jones's argument. Jones would say that it's not a third-party beneficiary of the deductible agreements or shouldn't somehow be involved in the arbitration. We've cited two cases which Jones states are maritime admiralty cases. The principles for which we've cited in those cases are restatement of agency and common law of contracts, New York, and ordinary principles of contract law, that if you get a direct benefit from a policy program like the one that's here, then you're obligated under the policy, you're estopped from denying that there's arbitration. And that's exactly what those two cases said. We're not talking about whether there was a benefit because there's no evidence that the premiums were reduced for Jones. I would submit that if the parent pays less, there is a benefit there, but that's not the issue. That would be whether or not there's a third-party beneficiary issue here. We're talking estoppel. Jones is estopped from denying that it's part of this program. Now, Mr. McCush said, and without any further questions, I think it's our point. Mr. McCush said it is the court's province to order the issues that are arbitrated, to identify the issues that are arbitrated. We submit that Judge Bucklow, in her last order, the September 21, 2001 order, did that. It's the issues as framed in those two letters, the September 6 and September 21 letters. Those are not settlement discussions. Now, there is no offer of compromise. If you read the September 6, 2001 letter from Watts to Zurich, there's no offer of compromise in there. They say, we don't have to pay any more than one deductible, and we're not going to pay any attention to the deductible agreements. Our reply to that was to say, that's a dispute. We want to arbitrate. 408 says you cannot use a settlement communication to test the validity or invalidity of a claim. We're not doing that. We're identifying the dispute by those letters. So we're not using them in violation of 408, and we would submit that they don't even constitute settlement communications. And with
Ms.
that,
Cathcart, can
yes.
I just ask you, at the time of contracting, what indicia is there that Jones was the intended beneficiary?
Well, it's not whether or not Jones is an intended beneficiary. That's not the question on an estoppel issue, but the evidence of it is that Jones was a subsidiary of Watts at the time the policies were issued. And at the time the deductible agreements were contemplated and discussed and communicated between the broker and the insurer. The broker as the agent for Watts. And as you'll see in the documents, in particular the exhibits attached, there was a long delay between finalizing these agreements, but they're identified in the binders and they're identified in the documents as having been part and parcel of the program. Watts and its subsidiaries, when Jones was a subsidiary, understood that they were that the premiums paid bought policies of insurance that included a retrospective premium concept and a payment back of both indemnity and defense dollars.
Is it industry practice, then, not to have third-party beneficiaries become signatories, for example, to the deductible agreements?
Well, they don't have to. It is industry practice to have them as separate named insureds. And if they are a named insured in the policy, they don't have to sign anything. They're brought within the coverages such as they are. And the coverages through the policies and the deductible agreements and the binders all include the deductible agreements. But that, I would maintain, is also a substantive issue here in arbitration. Is Jones subject to those agreements? And we think that's the merits of the case, which you should not get into as far as we're concerned. Right. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Cathcart. Ms. McCush?
One of the problems with this appeal is that there's a bit of a moving target. When the arbitration proceeding began, the question was, do the September letters frame an arbitrable dispute? And that was before any policy benefits had been paid. At that point in time, Zurich, that being the case, developed its anticipatory repudiation argument, which, again, the district court said was the sole basis for finding an arbitrable dispute. They have now abandoned that argument. There is no arbitrable dispute framed by the September letters. However, over time, they did pay policy benefits. And yet, Watts has never had a hearing, an arbitration hearing, with respect to the arbitration of disputes arising with respect to specific payments. And those specific payments, as I've described, arose under only two policies. And it is a judicial function, once again, to identify the arbitration agreements under which a dispute arises. That is the consummate job of the courts in an arbitration proceeding. So that is what we desire and what we want. And again, either as a function of this court's authority reviewing this de novo or remanding it back to the district court so that we can get a determination with respect to the specific defense costs paid in Armenta as to which agreements those arise under. I see my time is out.
You can complete your thought. I didn't want
to. I kind of did in a hurried way. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Our thanks to all counsel. Wish you a safe journey home, and the case will be taken under advisement.